All right, welcome to Speak for Yourself. I'm Jason Whitlock. That's Marcellus Wiley, that dude. Coming up, we'll tell you if Jason Garrett just cost the Cowboys another game.
And whose side are you on in the Eric Reed, Malcolm Jenkins feud? We discussed that, but start every day with a Whitlock. So what you got today, big dog?
Oh, it took less than a week for Rajon Rondo to blow up the Hollywood James experiment year one. 48 hours after LeBron James told his teammates to lay on the ground until one of his teammates helped him up, Rondo spit on Chris Paul, then dotted his cheek with a strong left hand,
yeah,
and LeBron responded by tugging and hugging Paul away from the fracas. All right, stop. Stop, Dante. That's not shade directed at LeBron James. I don't have any problem with LeBron's reaction. Rondo spit on one of LeBron's best friends. Rondo put James in an awkward and an impossible position. That's what Rondo does. He clashes with everybody. He clashed with his high school coach, Doug Bibby. Tubby Smith benched Rondo for 6 games at the University of Kentucky. In 2007, Rondo shattered a TV screen during a film session when Doc and Celtics assistant coaches criticized his play. 5 years later, when Doc Rivers left the Celtics, his inability to get along with Rondo was cited as a primary reason for leaving. I could go on. Trust me, Rondo is an irritant. It was always just a matter of when he would do something that created a problem for the Hollywood James experiment. It took 2 games. Now what? He's been suspended for 3 games. He's yet to apologize for spitting on Paul. The Lakers have so far defended Rondo. Maybe they haven't seen the tape, but I bet LeBron has. Rondo's lack of apology is indefensible. It's a glimpse at just how stubborn Rondo is. In all likelihood, he will blame LeBron James for not having his back in the fracas. Rondo will also check the tape and see that Lonzo Ball also had zero interest in involving himself in the melee.
No smoke.
What happened in three games? Does Lonzo do enough to remain in the starting lineup? And if Rondo remains a bench player, will he do so without further disrupting team chemistry? LeBron James is supposed to be the leader of this team. Is he really? Can this team be led? You put Lance Stephenson, Rajon Rondo, Michael Beasley, and JaVale McGee all on the same team, and we're supposed to be surprised that Brandon Ingram lost his composure and started a brawl in game 2? I'm not surprised. Magic Johnson assembled a circus for year one of the Hollywood James experiment. Everyone keeps saying it doesn't matter. The clowns will be gone in year 2. I'm not so sure. The stench of this season is going to be difficult to clean up. It's going to leave everybody involved diminished. I also think we put LeBron James in a horrible position. I don't think he's going to be able to get along with Rondo the rest of the year. All right, joining the desk, former NBA champion Dante Jones, former NBA star Caron Butler. Start with you,
yeah,
Marcellus. How can LeBron James coexist with Rondo moving forward?
Going to be difficult, and not for the obvious reasons. First of all, great essay. But let me summarize and simplify this. Based on all my experiences in the locker room, we only fight over 2 things, money and women. Now, I've seen a lot of scraps, and I've seen a lot of issues, but the ones that linger all circle around those 2 things. And let's talk about the women that were involved in this altercation, because that's where I think the real issue is. Every highlight, everybody's been talking about who spit on who. Did he spit on him? Whether Carmelo accidentally spit on him? Oh, did he really have an issue? Is it 10-year beef finally culminating? You know what this is? The real dominoes that continue to fall behind the scenes. We've seen this happen in the family section before. So reportedly, Rondo's significant other pushes Chris Paul's wife, Jada, what's up? And then she's sitting next to Savannah, LeBron's wife. Now, men on the court can have their issue and let that behind them. Teammates can talk it out. We had our beef, let it go behind us. But the emotional response that comes from those around you, entourages, family, friends, wives, significant others, is now the weight they have to carry even when they get past this. I think that's going to be some underlying tension for the rest of this season.
Great point of view, great way to point that out, and to have an understanding of how the wives do carry some weight on the players.
Some.
And have an impact, those interactions in the
whole
family
lot of
room.
Yeah. Yeah.
Impact all the
performance on the court. You're absolutely right. You had a great essay as well. I think Rondo and Bron can coexist because of the fact that Rondo is that fire that LeBron James need. He cannot provide everything on the court. What he can do, he can be a leader. He can provide points, assists, all those things, but he doesn't have to be the bully. He doesn't have to be the enforcer. And I thought that's why you signed Rondo and Lance Stephenson, because you needed some type of enforcer for him. Rondo's reaction to this, I didn't take it as he spit on him on purpose. I saw him having a mouthpiece in his mouth. And sometimes you can get spit on and think that it's on purpose, but it's not.
That highlight looked intentional.
But man, every time we slow things down does not mean that that's the way it really happened. And did I think he got spit on? Yes. Did I think Chris Paul reacted? I would have taken all three players on my team any day because they went, number one, they showed they had each other, they had their teammates back with B.I. Number two, Rondo has fight in him and Rondo's always going to compete. And number three, CP is always going to stand his ground as well. So those things are not something that I demonize in a sense. I thought it was justified on both parts. Was it wrong? Yes. But it just happens in an NBA game when two sides are competing, words are exchanged, guys are trying to stand their ground and show that they're here to stay.
I thought he did a great job of just, you know, all of them collectively. I'm talking about Brandon Ingram. He did a great job of just, you know, running to the action. You know what I mean? Look, if I'm
he
in a
started fo- it. He
hold
pushed-
up, hold up, pause.
And his if reason I, if, he started listen, it was valid.
If I'm in the foxhole with anyone, that's the type of guy that I want to go to war with.
Facts.
And I'm going to tell you why. Because we play for championships, right? But most importantly, you play for the respect of your peers. And if you're out there going to battle on the court with someone, that's the type of guy I want to have on my squad. I don't agree with the violence. Chris Paul is my guy. That's my brother. Rondo's my brother. That was my former teammate. But if you're going to battle between those lines, that's the type of teammate I want to roll with.
What did you think of LeBron's response then? He ain't giving off that kind of energy.
But I'm going to tell you, he did the right thing as a leader. Look, he calmed Chris Paul down. And it's only a handful of guys that could have done that. I think you saw on the Banana Boat crew, Carmelo Anthony was another guy that was with that group. So I feel like either Carmelo or LeBron was the only two individuals on that court that can take Chris Paul away from that situation. Rondo already pivoted and went out through the tunnel. He was done. That was diffused. Now, Brandon Ingram was the other guy that you needed to calm down. But look, he got his off. He felt good about it.
Help me out here. Help me out. And I know Dante has gone to unintentional. It's hard. When I see the replay, it's hard for me to say unintentional.
You slow down 100 times.
I know.
To look like. Okay.
Rondo's history.
If I spit on you, I'm not going to sit in front of your face and turn my head to you. I'm going to take a step back and be prepared for what I started.
Oh, no, that's wrong. This is an accident on purpose.
No.
He did this on purpose.
No,
you know why?
I would not because I wouldn't do that.
I give you CSI proof. First things first, why did Rondo have something come out of his mouth when he didn't have one word for Chris Paul before or after that moment?
We don't know that because they probably been chirping all game. And what you don't catch is the chirping, the pushing.
Okay.
They're competing. They're two point guards at the head of the snake. And I think that was something that boiled over. But what I do know is if I spit on you, I'm not going to accidentally spit on you.
Hey,
I'm
going to
set a tone. And
okay.
I'm not saying he didn't get spit on.
Oh, he did
but,
on
but
purpose.
If you get spit on you and it was accidental, you can't tell.
Let me tell you what happened. This is what he did. Same thing when I saw a quarterback's fingers on the ground and I took that step and I stepped on his fingers. He's like, man, what you doing? I was like, I got to take a step. My bad, big dog.
But you're not going to step and sit right here in his face, though.
No, that's the plan it off. When I know I'm about to do something, I'm not going to say nothing. I'm going to look around. And then that's it.
We all come from the block. If you spit on someone, you know what time it is.
Yeah, but that's why he did.
Put your guard up.
That's why he tried to.
And he did.
So that means he was ready.
He spit and turned. If that's what really happened.
He didn't initially put his defense up.
His hands up. Okay, hold. Let's do this.
We live on television. Somebody do that right now. We got action.
Let's take Dante and Karan's opinions out. What do you think Chris Paul thinks happened? Do you think Chris Paul thinks it's an accident?
It was justified for CP.
No. But Chris Paul doesn't think it was an accident. And that's why I go to, again, if somebody spits on you right now, Dante, and we ain't best friends, I'm going to have a problem with him moving forward. And unless there's an apology given, which Rondo doesn't seem to be given, Chris Paul is not letting this go. Chris Paul's wife ain't letting it go. And therefore, to me, LeBron James is going to find it very hard to let it go. And again, I blame LeBron in no way. If my best friend got spit on, felt like he got spit on intentionally, I got a problem with this dude, even if he's on my team.
But do you need the apology to be public? See, the public apology is for everybody else. Yeah. The private one could be us face-to-face. It could be on group text. We could be already on a FaceTime together as a collective.
You can't spit in my face and then text me an apology.
Can we take the Brandon Ingram part and say that Brandon Ingram showed that he's not going to be pushed around anymore. They take his quiet demeanor and they say, you know what, he's shy. He's being aggressive this year. And number two, he's not taking any mess. James Harden comes through the lane with those elbows, getting his contact, hit him in his face. That's why he was upset. Right. So he took that technical on purpose to let you know. And you should have, did you look at James Harden's reaction? Like, oh, he ain't playing no
about
more.
That life.
Oh, this look, young fella ain't playing. And I think that's what started it. But that's what B.I. wanted to set the tone to let you know, I'm here
and
now.
Listen at his statement. Look, Ingram. I was wrong for my teammates, but I also stepped up for my teammates, and I'll do it 10 times out of 10.
So lesson learned. Oh, man, lesson learned. I should have thrown the punch, but I will always have my teammates
always
back. And
my
I want that in my foxhole.
Y'all veterans.
Right.
Y'all too veteran I want that. For that fake flex. Like, I love me some Brandon Ingram.
I would say it if he didn't do it, but he took off.
This is Brandon Ingram saying game two of the year, and guess who I roll with every time I step out the house now? The king. So since the homie with me with the strap, I'm going to act like I'm tough everywhere I go. This is newfound bravado, and I'm not thinking it's so thorough, bro.
But I wouldn't say it's newfound bravado. I'm saying I didn't have people like that in my corner before. Now that I got them, they match me. He's growing as a man.
Respect to that.
He's getting older. I don't think this is something new. But then what we have to take off that, we have to take Lance, JaVale, and Michael Beasley out of this equation because Lance showed his maturity by getting him out of there early.
Yeah.
So we can't lump him into it.
Because I've lived that point.
Yeah.
I've been the kid. Look, I can remember when my cousin Kevin came home from jail and my chest got swole up and started anybody wanting static. And my cousin Kevin came over, swole from prison.
You had took somebody care like minded like you.
Yeah, I get.
That doesn't mean you ain't had it.
Then Kevin went home. And I had to carry it on my own.
You had sense.
You had common sense.
You had somebody like mine up with
this
you.
This is if doing you... too much. Somebody is going to break Brandon Ingram in half. He weighs about $160.
No.
I'm going to tell you.
People behind him.
Somebody
James
may break
no
him
smoke.
In half.
James didn't jump in that.
Somebody may possibly break him in half, but they're going to take one in the process.
Because he's swinging.
And look. Because
and
of
he'll
LeBron,
do it on any stage.
This is not. I'm not trying to shade LeBron, but again, he's running around like LeBron gonna have his back. He's 34, 35 years old. He ain't about that, as we just saw.
Well, I don't even think the tape proves that. I think the tape proves that Rondo got his back. Okay, and if something's going to happen, Ron has never been a guy who's going to jump into melee and throw hands be combative
right
with words.
That.
He's
Big
never.
Business.
That's not how he proves his point. He proves it with basketball. But some people are ready for that action, and Rondo is one. B.I. has shown that he's one. Lance is not going to back down. Mike Beasley ain't going to back down.
Oh, that's another one. Lance
but at least
team,
you want,
yeah,
you want
right.
to win a championship, you need guys that are tough and not going to take nothing.
No.
Golden State Warriors have guys who are mentally and physically tough and ain't going to take
Let's
no mess
over there.
Let's
don't get it twisted. Because they are leaning into the toughness because they can't knock down jump shots. That's the issue. Hey.
Can we get back to basketball?
Can they win a game?
If I'm Brandon Ingram, I'm feeling really good because I know I'm going to get a lot of buckets. Right. But Rondo is going to make sure I get off.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. He's going to find
you're
me.
The quarterback.
He's going to go outside his
right?
way
yeah,
to
yeah,
find
yeah.
me.
Oh, yeah. He's straight.
Oh, yeah. We are two games in, and the circus is already started.
Not a circus. You play two tough teams. You were in two good games to the last minute with a group
grenades.
Of guys.
They playing
two,
grenades
two teams
now.
That have been together for two seasons, two full seasons together.
Who was in the Western Conference Finals last year?
Huh?
Golden State, Houston.
All right. So all of a sudden, the Lakers are
nine-point losers.
But look, they was in control of the game. Really, the momentum was swinging. They was down two when that incident happened.
Not just the momentum
This ain't
swinging.
The same Houston team as last
I'm just saying,
year.
You're not no coming Trevor in Staples, reason. And it's not going to be an easy win.
Oh, no, the Lakers are
they
good.
Said that tone.
You got action.
Right.
It's fun to troll them right now because they are winless this year. Amazing. Second best team in L.A., Clippers winning again, beating that same Houston team. But in reality, there's a good team. You go against Portland. Portland has always been an issue, Achilles heel, for the Lakers, even when they had Shaq and Kobe back in those days. And then you have a Houston team that was coming off a tough loss. They wanted to get back on track. Lakers going to be fine. No circus this year.
Y'all crowning them, and they ain't even won nothing yet.
Not a game.
Yeah, they did win the fight. Rondo won the fight. I'll give him that.
No, Rondo lost the fight.
Right? Are you kidding me? That left hand, that left hand was the best punch thrown.
This ain't third grade where the first punch wins the fight. You got to start counting the points. Yeah, I'm hit him with an uppercut.
It's a draw.
I take a draw.
I'll take a draw.
We'll get right back to the show, but first, I wanted to tell our listeners about HelloFresh. HelloFresh is a meal kit delivery service that shops, plans, and delivers step-by-step recipes and pre-measured ingredients so you can just cook, eat, and enjoy. Why do I recommend HelloFresh? There's something for everyone. Three plans to choose from: classic, veggie, and family. Each box is made up of fresh, responsibly obtained ingredients from carefully selected farms and high-rated trusted sources. Make family dinners fuss-free with HelloFresh's picky eater, kid-tested, and approved family plan recipes. Rediscover the excitement of cooking. Look forward to your HelloFresh delivery, knowing dinner just got that much easier. HelloFresh believes cooking should be simple and convenient, not a chore. All the ingredients come pre-measured in handy labeled meal kits, so you know which ingredients to go with each recipe. Won't spend time all night in the kitchen because recipes only take around 30 minutes. There are many benefits of subscribing, so you can keep enjoying HelloFresh week after week. Spend less time meal planning and grocery shopping each week and get that time back to do more of what you love. Get delicious, filling meals delivered right to your door every week for less than $10 per serving and free shipping. For a total of $60 off, that's $20 off your first three boxes, visit HelloFresh.com/speak60 and enter speak60. Again, for a total of $60 off, that's $20 off your first three boxes, visit HelloFresh.com/speak60 and enter speak60 as the promo code. So visit HelloFresh today.
All right, welcome back. We're joined now by Fox NFL analyst Tony Gonzalez and Steelers legend James Harrison. All right, let's move to some big stories, starting with the Cowboys, where ESPN's Josina Anderson is reporting that the Cowboys are trading a first-round pick to Oakland for wide receiver Amari Cooper. The Cowboys' receiving corps has struggled all year, so adding Cooper could provide a much-needed downfield threat. The fire sale continues in Oakland.
Yeah.
But I love this move for the Cowboys and for Dak Prescott and for Jerry Jones. These guys are all in. They feel like the NFC East is still out there to be had. I think this is a tremendous move. They've needed a number one receiver. Now they got one. No more excuses for Dak or that offense.
Yeah, I really like the move in terms of giving a guy the breath of fresh air. Amari Cooper, you know, two great seasons and two not so great seasons by his own standard that he set. It's going to be interesting, though, because now the pressure shall shift solely on Dak Prescott. If you watched the game yesterday, Tony Romo continuously pointed out how lazy Dak's eyes were in some of the routes and some of the reads, despite having one of his better game. Yeah, oh yeah, right here, slant route, Cole Beasley.
No, you're right.
It was a few times, and I was like, Romo's in a tough position, because how critical can you be of a guy for the franchise he used to play for, et cetera. But all that said, he's going to be the best receiver they got. Now you put Cole Beasley in his proper spot as the number two, offense can open up.
First of all, I look at it from both sides. First of all, everything that I've been saying about Gruden, this is part of it, okay? This is part of that routine that I think it's that New England Patriots. We're getting rid of all of our players. We're going to stack these first-round picks. We're going to hit Vegas with this new team. In about 2 or 3 years, you're going to see the Raiders at the top of the NFL league. That's what I believe. Mm-hmm. But going back to the Cowboys, what this does for them, yes, it adds that receiver. Remember Cole Beasley came out a couple weeks ago saying, hey, watch the tape. We're getting open. So it doesn't matter if you're getting open or not. Dak still has to hit you. And this is my thing about Dak Prescott. We need to recognize who this player really is. He's not that pocket passer. I think he is that guy. He is a poor man's version of Cam Newton, where he has to use his legs to win. You look at his stats. When he has more than 7 carries, they win. They win. He's undefeated. He's never lost. So great move, great receiver. I think it's still going to help the team no matter what. But at the same time, we have to accept who Dak is, and he has to shift his game to more like Cam Newton if this is going to be successful.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. Dak is not going to be that pocket, you know, quarterback that's going to sit there and get you 300 yards, 350, you know, a game, and, you know, hit guys, you know, with laser shots here and there everywhere across the field. He's a guy that, you know, he needs a running game behind him so that he can, you know, be able to sit back, do the play action, get that long ball out there, and, you know, be effective for that team. But this will be a great move for the Cowboys.
Here's what both of y'all are missing, and you just hinted at it. Dak needs a running game, and the offense needs a running game. And if you watch that game yesterday, they need someone to stretch the field to get those safeties out of the box.
Right.
Zeke Elliott was very ineffective yesterday. One of the Redskins bottled him up rather easily, and I think that's what this move is as much about, providing Dak some help, but also providing Zeke some help with a guy that can get those safeties out of the box.
Yeah, same thing happened in New England with Josh Gordon and him just getting on the field. All of a sudden, you see him four consecutive games, 38-plus points. Mm-hmm. Why? Even if Josh Gordon's not going off, it's just the threat, just the fact that now he affects what you think is coming from the offense. So I think he can have that same effect here, but I'm more with Tony. Like, the exposure of Dak Prescott may occur because of this move. That may be the unintended consequence, but
why couldn't it be the blossoming or the re-blossoming?
It could be. That's why I use the word could. But the thing is, Dak Prescott, 39 games. We saw three games over 300 yards, and we saw 16 under 200. Hey, that's not so good. And now you're going to have a guy who's going to sit there and expose either A, you can't give me the ball, or B, even with me here, we're not good enough. Who's that going for?
I'm going to look on the more positive side. And, I mean, you guys are all highly experienced NFL players. But Dak Prescott's in his third year. This is the year when he's supposed to reveal himself. Mm-hmm. And they took all the tools away from him. And Jason Witten, Dez Bryant. Now they just gave him one back. And regardless of whether Amari Cooper is a superstar coming in or a true number one, just the threat of him and what he's done in the past should help Dak out.
Yeah. You know, like I said, I feel exactly the same way, but it comes down to, I believe you have to get that run game going for him to be effective. He's not a guy that's going to just sit in the pocket and kill you. You know what I'm saying?
The great thing about this trade is that we're going to find out.
We're going to find out.
Because he's got no excuse, and they need to find out. They actually, the more I think about it, they needed to make this trade because Dak's coming up on that contract, okay? Am I really going to put $30 million in this man's pocket and he can't throw for over 250 yards in a league where you're supposed to throw over 250 yards? That's the benchmark as a quarterback. You have no excuse now. You have no excuse now. I think it's a great move by the organization. Let's see who you really are now, Dak, because now we've given you some tools.
Man, y'all talking a lot about Dak, but there's another guy that I think gets a lot of pressure now, and it's Jason Garrett. Mm-hmm. So, to me, if you watch that game yesterday, that was a coaching disaster by Jason Garrett. And, you know, look, I know the penalty they called on the long snapper or the field goal snapper, that's what everybody's talking about. But to me, the way Jason Garrett handled that in-game situation, they weren't aggressive at all. Mm-hmm. Everything he did was about setting up for a 45 to 48-yard field goal. And are you kidding me? I'm looking at guys all around the league miss extra points and things like this, and this guy's very comfortable kicking a 48-yard field goal and wasting time on the clock.
Well, everything that they say, you know, Jerry Jones, you know, the head Garrett, you know, they're saying that this is their quarterback. You know, they believe this is their franchise quarterback. But everything that they do is, you know, as far as allowing him to go and show that he's that guy, says something totally different. The play calling doesn't show it.
Yeah, you talk about those waning moments and having the ball that close to scoring a touchdown, but you then all of a sudden pump the brakes and make sure you stay conservative. And no team should have full confidence in kickers this year, it seems like. I mean, maybe it's an anomaly, but this year it just seems like kickers all the time. We saw Justin Tucker.
Yeah.
What? He never misses an extra point. Yeah. First ever. So I look at it like Jason Garrett is an issue, but the refs were really the problem. Think about this. The refs just penalized a long snapper for going through his routine. And you don't think that's correct. Watch how the next play after the penalty, after the infraction, he does the exact same thing and no penalty. So hold on, referees. Can you at least be enlightened to what I do pre-snap? Because there was nothing sudden about it, nothing dramatic, and nothing with intent to draw off the defensive lineman. But shout out to Jonathan Allen, as we're all taught as defenders.
They give you anything to take advantage of. Take advantage of it and be the best actor you can be.
I'm looking at your face while you said it's on the refs. The refs, yeah, that's a bad call, but there's no guarantee, just like you said, because of the state of the fragility of these kickers' right. minds right now. They're so soft. Anyway, don't get me going on kickers. But Jason Garrett, I agree right now. This is, to me, in this league, the way it's set up, like, be aggressive, go for it. Mike Vrabel yesterday went for it. I'm all for that. I don't know if I agree with the play call, but go for it. Right. This is, especially with the guys you have on that team who you think you have, like you said, James. Come on, put it on. Put the ball on them. Put the onus on them.
I'm looking at the whole league has changed, but Jason Garrett hasn't gotten the memo. I watched virtually every game yesterday. I got three direct TV Sunday ticket packages.
All
big time, big time.
I see that suit, too.
I'm
spending that money.
I'm looking at every coach go for it on fourth down, be super aggressive, and I'm watching this Cowboys game and I'm like, what is Jason Garrett thinking? There's no guarantees in this field goal game. Get as close as you can. It was like he had no confidence in Dak. And then that run with Ezekiel Elliott, when they've bottled him up the entire game, it was just stupid. And so, I go back to this Amari Cooper decision, and I think it's about getting Zeke some running room, and I think it's about putting the pressure, really, on Jason Garrett. No excuses there. Jerry's been crystal clear, man. He likes Dak Prescott. I don't think his actions have kind of said he likes Jason Garrett, but he hasn't been as effusive in his praise of Jason Garrett. So I look at this Amari Cooper move, and again, I think most of the pressure's on Jason Garrett because Jerry likes Dak and Zeke.
Don't you think Jason, he doesn't trust his players?
Uh-huh. Right.
That's all that.
Jason
that's
Garrett does.
Jason right, Garrett yeah. doesn't trust his players. I got two kids. Well, one's 10, one's 8, and this morning we're cooking breakfast, and they want to cook pancakes. And the 10-year-old can do it. And so I'm like, yeah, you can do it. You can go switch there and flip it over. But the 8-year-old, he can't do it. And I'm not going to trust him to do it. I hope that's good parody.
No, I agree with you.
But I think that's how it is with Jason Garrett and his players, with Dak and the rest of them. He just doesn't trust them. That's all that's saying.
Careful, though, Tony. Sometimes somebody knows something you don't. And the reason I don't trust him is for reasons I don't want to expose. But at the same time, he's being conservative because he's been conditioned to be conservative. Maybe he's given Dak those opportunities. And I saw a couple yesterday. Romo pointed out a couple that – Dak, it
Romo
was
nitpicking, but I hear you. Well, it was accurate.
Yeah.
It was nitpicking.
But there were moments where Dak, okay, you have the opportunity right there. Make the play. Pull the trigger. And Dak has a conservative mindset in an NFL that is saying, go out there and go get it, and there's very few.
Dude, you got to think about it. He hasn't had to go out there and sling anything. In the first couple of years, they had a great running game. The offensive line was doing good. So his whole job was to go ahead, hand this ball off, and when the time come, play action and hit it.
Right.
And that's what he was doing. Right. That's what we had when early with Ben, you know. We ran the ball with Bussey, Willie Parker, all them, and then it came down to it, and you know, Ben would hit a pass here and there. He'd scramble there, keep the play alive, and we get big plays off of him. And right now, he doesn't have that.
All right, welcome back. Tony Gonzalez and James Harrison are back. Let's return to Philadelphia, where Cam Newton's fourth quarter heroics weren't the only fireworks yesterday. Before the game, there was a showdown between two of the NFL's best-known activist players, with Carolina's Eric Reid getting into it with Malcolm Jenkins. After the game, Reid explained why he was so heated.
Anything to do with the disagreement about the Players Coalition?
He's a sellout.
Why do you say that?
He's a sellout.
Is that what you told him?
Yes. I believe a lot of players should have stepped up for Colin. I believe Malcolm capitalized on the situation. He co-opted the movement that was started by Colin to get his organization funded. It's cowardly. He sold us up.
I would never get up here and say anything bad about somebody who I know whose intentions were real about helping, you know, their community, especially another black man. So I'm gonna do that. But I'm not gonna get up here and say anything negative about that man. I respect him. I'm glad he has a job. I'm glad he's back in the league. People like that.
I'm not going to take the high road that Malcolm Jenkins took. I'm going to take the low road that I love to drive on. Eric Reid's a clown, and this to me proves what a clown. I've said it from the word go. This is about branding and credit. If Colin Kaepernick wanted to lead this movement, he should have opened his mouth and raised his hand and said, I'm going to lead the movement. Instead, he's hidden and not spoken a word really other than tweets. And so he wasn't man enough for the job that Malcolm Jenkins stood up and volunteered for. And so that's the problem. If Eric Reid has a problem with somebody, have a problem with Colin Kaepernick, who wasn't man enough for this job. And it's always, in my view, has always been about credit and branding. Colin Kaepernick trademarked his image, and he's going to sell lampshades and shampoo and all that other stuff. He ain't about this life. He's never been about this life. And now they want to attack a man who stood up and took on the burden of something Kaepernick started but wasn't man enough for, and now Malcolm Jenkins is a sellout. Get out of here with that BS.
Yeah, a lot of that, bro. disgusting that you even got to pick a side. Disgusting you even got to pick a team. But I, by the question, I will say I'm team Malcolm Jenkins in this feud. One, I think Eric Reid is working under some fallacy that there's ownership of a movement, of the cause. Like, I'm born in 1974. I grew up on hip-hop, and I grew up in a community that was talking about these same social injustice issues back then. Go listen to an N.W.A. first album, 1987, 88.
They only had one song on there, but go ahead.
They're talking about these same things, and there's not this ownership of this. Eric Reid's acting like Malcolm Jenkins took something from him or took something from Kaepernick. Right. Grandma used to tell me they can't get what you don't give them. Yeah. And you know what? Did you give it up? Did you do what Jason Whitlock said? Just stay out the fray, and then all of a sudden someone else jumped in that situation. Very damning for those outsiders who are trying to look for true leadership in this cause, right? Because this is the crabs in the bucket.
Yeah,
this is everybody's trying to take their ownership and property in something that's bigger than all of them, so they should be more inclusive than they are.
Yeah, I'm with you guys, but I'm not as strong. I just feel like he picked the wrong place and time to do it. I felt like if that's something he felt that strong about, he could have gotten contact with him before this game, and he didn't have to do it in that way to where, you know, everyone, you're sitting up here, like you said, you have to pick a side now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Emotional intelligence. I mean, if you have something to say to me, then call me on the phone or set up a meeting that's not the place to do it. And I had heard, okay, the whole thing started when there's been rumors out there flying around. The whole thing started when Kaepernick took the knee, Eric was out there, that they wanted leadership. They wanted to be the guys at the front of it, okay? But they didn't want to spread it around, which to me is selfish, okay? What is yours, your true motive? Is it for you to be on the Wheaties box throwing up the black fist, or what are you going for here? This stuff right here is the people watching from the outside. Right. I agree with you.
Yeah.
I agree with you. They're looking at this now going, here we go again. They can't get themselves together, and it just makes a joke and a spectacle. That's all you did, Eric Reid, was create another punchline for something or for people to look at and go, look at this. This is why.
It was
and
a publicity stunt.
Shut his mouth. That's what he's got to do.
If you can go punch it into Google. Everybody already knew where Eric Reid was with Malcolm Jenkins. This has been discussed already. And so there have been private discussions and text messages and conversations behind the scenes. But Eric Reid had a chance with the cameras to have a little publicity stunt and draw some attention to himself and to Colin Kaepernick. And Colin Kaepernick's retweeting it out. And they all, these soul brother number one, they all for black people. And now Colin Kaepernick, he's jumped in. I'm with team Eric Reid and all this other stuff. This is what Colin Kaepernick, I'm just sorry, I'm going to keep it this way. He would have never survived in my locker room. A coward. I'm just sorry. He's hiding behind Eric Reid now because he ain't man enough to come out and do what Malcolm Jenkins did. Malcolm Jenkins has stood on this and has taken the heat and negotiated something that has benefited NFL players and communities or whatever. How can you take a dump on this man because you weren't willing to step out here and stand on it the way I've been talking about it from day one? We keep comparing him to Muhammad Ali. Muhammad Ali wasn't scared of nobody. And he certainly would have been running around hiding behind Twitter and his girlfriend.
Hey, look, emotional intelligence is a great way of terming this. In a moment where we should show alliance, we're being adversarial, which is very disturbing because maybe they're doing it two different ways, but you're trying to do the same thing.
Right.
So that's what I don't understand. In a world where we play in the ultimate team sport, that two players of that same sport can't understand that
We are doing two different things, but we're trying to get to the same goal. Like, the linemen don't have to do what the running backs have to do. And never is there should be a beef, man, you stole my shine. You imagine a moment where that was the conflict in the locker room. Now let's take this out the locker room to our communities. And once again, we're seeing this, which is probably one of the things that's underlining the issue in the first place, is that in our communities we have this dissension. And then we now extract it to locker rooms where we have professionals and people who are supposed to be more intelligent with their position and platform. And you call me a sellout? Like, one, you calling me a sellout is almost complimentary. If you're going to say it in the terms of I took this action to monetize something, to really bring back resources, and that's a sellout, but what are you going to go back with? Just rhetoric? I got to come back with something to help the people to feel value of their lives and their surroundings.
Something tangible.
Yeah. Why is that a sellout? That's just what's so crazy about it.
Well, I think it comes down to, like I said, emotional intelligence. So when I speak about Eric Reed, I'm not saying he's dumb. Yeah. I just think he just doesn't know any better because he doesn't understand that unity is what creates change, not division. And one, you guys are both wanting the same thing. Like, you was a perfect example. We're on the same team. All you did was set it back now. Mm-hmm. Now, that's why if you do have a gripe, there's nothing wrong with that. But go talk to him. Well, don't do it in front of the cameras. That just, the people on the other side of it are looking at that going, yes. Yeah. That's all you did. That's all you did. Now they're saying yes. Thanks.
Before we move on, I want to apologize for my lack of emotional intelligence. I want to be crystal clear here. Colin Kaepernick, not a coward. The way he's handled this situation has been cowardly, in my opinion. From the rip, I feel like the way he's handled this has been cowardly. I don't believe the man is a coward. I want to walk that back. I want to be emotionally intelligent and be fair. I just don't respect the way he and Eric Reed have handled this. I believe those actions have been cowardly. To the Bengals, whose blowout by the Chiefs last night wasn't their only loss this week. Bengals linebacker Vontaze Burfict was fined $112,000 for multiple hits in Cincinnati's showdown with Pittsburgh last week. Reportedly, Bengals owner Mike Brown called the fines unfair and excessive. I completely agree. I'm doing this topic because we got James Harrison here. Yeah. I've dug into your pocket a million times.
Vontaze broke your record for most fines. Look at this.
No. That record was been broke a long time ago. That was before I even got broke. My thing is the NFL today, the soft NFL today, that's how they're calling things. Any other 15 years ago, that's how you played football. Before a guy get down, you go ahead, you get something on him. You want him to feel you. You want him to feel. Every guy that goes out here and says he's not trying to hurt someone when he hits them is lying. I'm not trying to injure anybody. I'm not trying to put anybody out of game. But if I get a chance to hit Tony Gonzalez, I'm going to try and give him everything I could give him and make sure he feels me.
Within the space of the rules.
Exactly.
The
but now the they've changed those rules.
And they changed them even before you played. You couldn't head slap when we played, but they could before. Guess what? Evolve with the game.
Right.
He has still send a message.
What he's
in this
doing
space?
Now is, yes, it's.
He deserved these fines, in your opinion?
That's a little excessive. The amount of money that they find him, I think, is a little excessive. I've been fined.
What? $100,000 wasn't.
The dude, that's one quarter of football for him based on how much he makes.
Who cares how much he makes? It's about what the fine is.
You realize
back in the day, what was your fine, man? What, $3,000, $5,000? When you played, what was it, $1,000?
I got a $10,000 one on Peyton Manning.
$10,000.
Yeah, hold on. But I also was an 11-time offender.
I think it was a little excessive. But like you said, in the NFL that they're playing in today with the rules they have today, yeah, he was above and beyond what you're allowed to do today.
Okay, what would you suggest to Vontaze Burfict if you keep fining him? I think I read somewhere in terms of fines and missed games, it's up to like $4 million?
$4 million.
Okay, yeah. So obviously, emotional intelligence again, it's not sinking in.
Uh-huh.
For whatever reason, it's not sinking in, and you continue to play that way. What do you say? And I'm asking myself that question. For me, if I'm the commissioner, I'm going to say, look, I'm going to find you this big, and I'm going to keep increasing it. And if you keep doing it, I'm going to keep taking your money. We're going to keep giving that money to charity. It's where the money goes. But eventually, I got to get you out of the league. You have no purpose in here. Because if you can't adjust and play by the rules, you got to go.
No question. You got to play by the rules they have today.
James, listen. Hold on, James. Even in the modern NFL, Antonio Brown wasn't on the ground, and the guy comes in with a forearm.
And they're
that, to me, is not illegal.
It's illegal now because he came in with it to his head.
Yeah. Told you that Whitlock last week. And
dude, you realize you can't put nothing on nobody's head today, man.
We used to
play with a term we call put Rydell on their ass.
Yeah.
That right there, that's what you put on them. Now, man, you can't do that. Put your face in the fan, so to speak. Mm-mm, don't put your face in there now. You got to get that out the way.
Games evolve, though. It's changed.
Right.
It's not going to be, it's never going back. Ratings are up.
Oh, no question.
They want people safe.
They play. Listen, you got 30 to 40 games. They saying that's great. You get a 20 to 23 game. They talking about, that's low scoring. What you mean that's low scoring? I thought low scoring game was like 6-9 or something like that.
Yeah, that happened a couple weeks ago, Jack. You know? Tennessee.
Like,
don't want to see that every day in my life.
Boring.
I like seeing a good defensive battle.
I take soft NFL if it means more points.
Wow.
You want to see 9-6?
I love to see 9-6.
Man, you by yourself in that
game. I like seeing hard hitting. I like seeing balls coming loose.
Yeah, that's what
I like all that.
I like, but people want to see the scores, okay?
That's what the people want to see. That's what they're going to. True statement. All the rules is to protect the receivers and the quarterbacks.
Yeah.
No question about it.
And checks that are going to go in the defensive players' pockets because the game is going to keep expanding, and it has. It's worked out. Whatever the NFL is doing, it is working right now.
Hey, I'm just telling you what I like, baby.
And me. And I agree with you. Thanks, Tony James.
Two-man bar over there.
All right, welcome back. Dante Jones and Caron Butler are back. Let's move to the NBA, where Russell Westbrook made his season debut last night, dropping 32-12-8. But even that wasn't enough to stop the Thunder from losing to the Kings by 11 points. After all the fanfare this summer about Paul George's decision to stay in Oklahoma City, the Thunder are now off to an 0-3 start, the worst in franchise history. I think this is a big deal. And I say that just because, and I know Russ set out the first two games, but to have Sacramento handed to you like that, and to get off to an 0-3 start after Paul George makes this huge decision to stay in OKC, I'm a little bit concerned if I'm an OKC fan.
Well, I'm going to get through this quick because I'm flanked by too much basketball over here, but I would say that he's the center of their universe. It's designed for Russell Westbrook, and his absence in the preseason, his absence around these guys while he's dealing with the knee injury, it's a devastating blow to this team because as much as you want to say they still have talent, they didn't have a Roberson as well. You can see a Paul George-led team should be able to win some games, but it's too early in the season where they're still trying to figure out themselves without their main guy. I think that was too difficult for them.
You're still in week one, and you're trying to figure out what you just touched on, Marcellus, where you're trying to figure out how you're going to play with your guy. Missed the preseason, had a couple practices, probably wasn't too intense, because you're trying to rehab his situation and get him back on the platform to be the better version of himself. So it takes time.
It's the first week of the season.
Now it's the second week. Now you got action.
Sacramento.
My thing was he looked like himself. That was my main concern. Was he going to be explosive? Was he going to get to his spots? Was he going to do all these things, keep up the pace? He did. He passed the test. Now let's see what happened in the next 10 games.
In basketball, you do not overreact week one and week two. The tone is not set in those 2 weeks. Teams are still trying to figure what their identity is, how they're going to play, how they're going to play off each other. Russ not being there is a big minus for the home opener when they played great against Golden State. That was a great game. Mm. And the Sacramento loss is just one loss in itself. It's a bad representation of what they want to do for their season. I still have high expectations for that team. I think they could be the second or third best team in the West because the way they're constructed, but not having Russ there and not having Russ in a groove and ready to play and not practicing, as he shot the ball not great from three. So that's a part of his game that that's been evolving and it is a big part of his game now. So him not being prepared is a part of that loss, but I don't think it will linger into the regular season.
Yeah, I totally agree because you look at Portland last season. They was able to get as high as a 3 seed. And then you look at the personnel going down, in vertical order. Russell Westbrook is probably top two guys in the association. He's going to bring it night in and night out. Arguably, triple-double, back-to-back.
He's a problem.
Most athletic guard at that position. He's going to bring it.
But is his team going to bring it with him? This is a team discussion, not about Russell Westbrook. When I look around the West, the Denver Nuggets
yes.
aren't to be trifled with.
They are Houston, a problem.
New health, Orleans.
Health is a big part of the representation you put out in week one and week two. And the excitement of the season lets teams that are not going to be playoff teams still have great games. Is that, can they bring that for 82 games? Do I think the Sacramento Kings will be bringing that for 82 games? I don't think so because they're young. But they're a team to look out for and on the watch.
4-7, OKC is going to be there. 4-7, somewhere in there.
4-7. He said top three. I'm 6.
They're going to be in the playoffs.
6-7.
They're
going to
be in the playoffs. Yeah.
They're going to be in the playoffs.
Yeah. Their teams like the Clippers off to a faster start. That consistent excellence. Will they be able to keep that up?
So when you see them win two games,
right?
Y'all got one to win the championship.
You say championship,
right? Exactly.
Or bust, right? Yeah. Now.
You see what I'm saying?
I'm prefacing.
Bet you there haven't been a lot of 0-3, top one or two seeds, but we'll see. All right, to Toronto, where Kawhi Leonard and the Raptors are looking good. They're off to a 3-0 start and even beating the Celtics over the weekend. But the team doesn't seem to be taking anything for granted and wants to make sure their fans aren't either, showing a video before their win over Boston that pretty much admits Kawhi won't be sticking around.
Canada, enough with the insecurities. We are world class. Let me tell you something. Forget that he left and he left and that he left too. They couldn't bring us what we wanted, what we deserved. Hold them accountable for what they left behind. But then, please put it to rest. Stop fretting about will he stay or will he go. Enjoy this for what it is.
If you haven't seen this whole deal, you need to go watch it. I loved it, thought it was tremendous. I think it's the right message to the fan base, and I think it's the right message to the team.
That thing was hot garbage. I can't believe you over
hot there. Garbage.
Really? I mean, beyond, boy, that was bad.
Why?
Let me explain yourself. Really?
First of all, rappers turn poets never goes well. Let's just be real about that. That has never been the way to go. It was too long. What the hell? We ain't watching a 2.5 minute video in 2018.
It was before the game.
Okay, I'm glad I didn't go to that game. That's too long. It was too weak, too scattered, littered, shots everywhere. Vince Carter, duck. T-Mac, duck. Insecure fan base, duck. Kawhi may not even be here, but enjoying why he's here, duck. I'm like, what? It made no sense. There was no thesis, no commonality.
Carpe diem was the thesis. Seize the day.
I grabbed the meaning of it right away. I did not catch. I caught the shots later as you speak about them. But
yeah.
Basically what they said was, we're not victims. We're not going to live in the past. We're not going to worry about who left us. Stay in the moment. Appreciate what you have right here. Probably the best team that you've ever had. The best player that you've ever had. Stay in the moment. Appreciate him while he's here. Because maybe if you appreciate him, like what happened with Paul George, we may be able to keep him.
Okay, but who are you talking to? If I pay my money and I'm sitting there, I'm not insecure. I'm not a victim. I'm sitting here with these court
sides. That's all they talk about. That's all they talk about when they talk about the Raptors.
I've seen a case where they're trying to control the narrative. Look, we know we don't want the Kawhi. Yeah, or create one. You don't want the Kawhi questions all season long. Look, enjoy this. And what have we really accomplished over the past couple years? We got number one seed in the Eastern Conference. That was a great. That's unbelievable. But it didn't amount to nothing. We didn't host up a trophy at the end of the season. So most importantly, look, we have a shot with this team right here. We had some changes. Deal with it, accept it, embrace it, and let's move forward.
But that's 27 other teams in the last decade that can sit there and say, we haven't won anything lately. I don't want to hear a victim speech. I don't need to see a 2.5
That wasn't a victim speech. That was the anti-victim speech. That's why I loved it.
It's crazy. First of all, this they out there, you just said it. What are they talking to?
Who is they?
Yeah, who the hell is they?
Shout out to Callan.
Exactly. I was almost disturbed that you would place that label on yourself as a franchise that, okay, we should be just happy someone's here no matter how long they want to stay. If he doesn't think we're good enough, that's okay. Enjoy the process. Enjoy the ride. Like, you're damning us even further because you're probably insecure that he's not going to stay and you're trying to get ahead of the argument.
But when you have no expectations, what's great about that?
No expectations?
They have expectations.
They got Kawhi Leonard there.
Okay.
That brings something
but
to
it. But it took away all the other expectations. Like, look, that wasn't nothing. We didn't achieve anything.
This is not how
this
Hollywood.
Is go time.
This is not a movie
now.
Opening.
It's stating the facts.
They're trying to do a movie opening like, oh, we may not make expectations.
They heard Kawhi wanted to come to Hollywood, so they're trying to bring
teams,
Hollywood to
29
Toronto.
Other teams is going
to
feel the same way y'all feel at the end of the year.
They stated
no
some,
trophy.
They stated
relax.
Some facts.
I don't want to see videos 29 other places.
They stated some facts. Listen,
go.
We're the best team in the East. We got the best player in the East right now.
Hold on, they're not the best team in the
East. I think they are
better
the best
than Boston?
Team. Did they just show it? Did they show?
They just
beat Boston.
Week one.
Straight up. Straight up. Both teams ready to play. Both teams healthy.
You just told me.
Straight up.
Week one,
I'm gonna
tell you right now.
No. I said we don't get too high, too low. But what I'm saying, you had two healthy teams that came in, played each other, and they set the tone for that two top teams in the East. But they just stating the facts that we believe that we're the best team in the East. We have the best player in the East, and that's appreciative and living this moment right now.
Look,
not worry about that.
Let me just remember who you're talking to. This is a Clippers fan. He don't know a damn thing about winning.
Where's our victim speech?
He don't know a damn thing about winning. He don't know how to set a winning mentality. He's a Clippers fan.
Y'all
Clipper Darryl is his leader.
Y'all gave Blake his video and his whole thing. That was the victim speech.
That was wrong.
He will be in the Raptors.
Blake bought in.
He bought into it.
All right, welcome back. Time now for Tell Us Marcellus, where we put Marcellus on the spot and get into some of the hot button issues of the day. Let's start in Jacksonville, where the Jaguars slide continued this week. After an ugly loss to the Texans, things got even uglier in the locker room when reportedly the team got into a heated argument just as reporters were being let in. And after a week of silence, Jalen Ramsey finally did some talking when he got the chance.
Y'all walk in here, y'all see how it is in here. Y'all see how we vibe with each other. Y'all see how we vibe towards the coaches. Y'all see how it is. This is no secret what's going on here right now. Ain't nobody gonna say it because, you know, we can't, but it ain't no secret what's going on, and it ain't right now, so it is what it is.
All right, obviously Ramsey declined to drop any names there. Tell us, Marcellus, should he have named names?
Hell yeah. Coach always said names and numbers. If you're gonna speak out, I want to hear it. So it's amazing that he's not thorough with it. He ain't saying it with his chest. Like, if you're going to be outspoken, you have to speak out. I was in that same position before. Now, what I did didn't age well, but
let me preface it by saying that. But Drew Brees' rookie year was a struggle.
And we had a veteran, Doug Flutie. And in those times, I was empowered by the entire locker room. Go upstairs, Wiley, and tell him we need Doug Flutie to be the starter. So I said it. But I said it, and I said the names and the numbers, because if you're going to go there, you got to go there. And it's amazing that Jalen Ramsey does it in comfort when it's good for him, when it's advantageous to him. But when it's not, all of a sudden I'm starting to hear him talk about, he said this, we all know the issue, right?
And then Blake Bortles.
It has to be, duh. And then seconds later, he's like, well, if I knew what the issue was, we wouldn't be taking all these losses. I would share that with y'all. Huh? Makes sense. So this is what happens when you don't go no comment, and then you try to step there, but don't go all the way there.
Calling for Doug Flutie as opposed to calling for Cody Kessler is... makes it a little hard.
A man is as faithful as his options, right? So look, you don't like them options, but it beats Blake Bortles right now.
All right, to Miami, where Dolphins coach Adam Gase had a rough Sunday, losing to the Lions and then getting put on blast by wide receiver Devontae Parker's agent, who called the coach incompetent for keeping Parker out of the game. Tell us, Marcellus, do you have a problem with Parker's agent doing this?
Not at all. As a matter of fact, I'm glad he did it, and I hope more agents are empowered to do it, because there are politics at play in the NFL, and it happens all the time, and rarely is it highlighted. Colin Kaepernick comes to mind for a lot of people in a glaring way. But beneath that, I'm talking about on the day-to-day, week-to-week conversation where a player is good enough to be on the field. A player is just not in good grace with the organization or good grace with the coach. I had an example once, a running back who wouldn't defer to his running back coach because he was right. And the running back coach just wanted him to respect the pecking order. Like, even if I say it and it's wrong, it's still right. And they beefed to the point where they had to bench the dude. Now, I've seen politics at play where you got an incentive. If you get 50 yards in the next game, all of a sudden you get this $100,000 bonus. And mysteriously, the guy's inactive. And the guy knew he could have made the money, and he's been making the money. He's been playing all these games, Devontae Parker example. And he didn't get the opportunity. So this happens all the time in a political world, that level of the NFL.
All right, let's move to Tom Brady, who is fresh off a win over the Bears in Chicago on Sunday and didn't waste any time sending a message to his next opponent, Marcellus' old team, the Buffalo Bills.
Another great win. 5-2, got to get to 6-2, my boy LG.
6-2 on the way.
Woo! Bills Mafia, here we come.
All right, tell us, Marcellus, low-hanging fruit here by Brady going after the Bills Mafia. Bills have scored like 20 points all season.
Yeah, that ain't what we do. That ain't what we about. We about the Bills Mafia, though, and he done picked the wrong team at the wrong time to talk some noise. We're going to knock that smile upside down, baby. I'm telling you, Bills Mafia knows what this week is. I don't think Tom Brady knows. He just out there thinking, oh, I don't beat this team 28 out of 31 times. Another easy win. Guess what this week is? Thurman Thomas Hall of Fame Ring of Honor ceremony. Do you know what that means to Buffalo? Do you know they tailgating right now to get in that zone to come bring that noise? You think that it's loud out there on a normal weekend. It's going to be insane. And I have nothing on the field to support my argument, but you know what? Bills Mafia about to bring some
I'm going to tell you the most shocking thing about that video. Tom Brady has a hype man.
Uh-huh.
He has his own DJ Khaled. That blew my mind.
I told you, Brady's into that branding, that marketing now. He learned a little something from Gronk.
It's time for my favorite segment in the show where I get to be anti-social. Darnell Smith, our social media manager, is here wearing a very lovely Warren Central shirt. Represent. Love that golf shirt.
Uh-huh.
Appreciate that.
Clean, play man. Ben Davis this week coming up.
Ben Davis?
Yeah, won't talk.
Like the khaki suit dude? What are y'all playing them old people out there?
It's a big game. It's a
huge
big game.
Playoff
time.
Oh, there you go.
What's popping out on those Twitter streets, Darnell?
Yes, sir. We're going to start off with today's big news with the Cowboys trading for star wide receiver Amari Cooper. But while Twitter is buzzing with optimistic Cowboy fans, Raider Nation is also salivating over acquiring another first-round pick in next year's draft. But friend of the show and professional buzzkill, Bucky Brooks, tweeted, "We can applaud the Raiders for having three first-round picks in 2019, but it's meaningless if John Gruden can't select three blue-chip players. He's traded away two Pro Bowl players, Mack and Cooper. Let's see if he can pick college players capable of playing up to that standard. It ain't easy." Do y'all think Gruden could capitalize on three first-round picks?
Yeah, I think Bucky's setting the bar really high, though. He's got to nail all three. If he nails two of three, it's a great success. If he finds one great, awesome Hall of Fame type player, I still give him the victory. But going three for three, nobody does that.
Yeah, tough though, man. I mean, one, you're going to be graded on the backdrop of what was lost. He basically went to this team and said, who are our top five players? And he's gotten rid of at least three of those. I mean, Amari Cooper, Khalil Mack, Marquette King in the special teams part of the game. It's sad to see that all those guys had to go in what looks like a demo effort by this team. But will he nail all three? Absolutely not. He's going to have more chances, like you said. He's going to have a mulligan in there. So I think he's going to go two for three.
We'll see. All right, Darnell, what's next?
Yeah, let's move to Amy Schumer.
Oh, boy.
The actress slash comedian made waves on Instagram on Friday when she posted a rant about the NFL and its treatment of Colin Kaepernick, including statements, "I wonder why more white players aren't kneeling. I personally told my reps I wouldn't do a Super Bowl commercial this year. And I think it would be cool if Maroon 5 backed out of the Super Bowl like bad girl Riri, a.k.a. Rihanna, did." Whitlock, you took issue with this, right?
Major issue, and I had my Twitter off gassed up just for this segment. Amy Schumer with all I got.
The whole can.
Listen, Amy, you know nothing about football. You need to stay out of this. Football is a sport that has created more black millionaires than any other industry. We don't need to be boycotting the NFL to support equality. Hollywood wishes it had the kind of diversity and inclusion and success with minorities that pro football has had. Amy, you need to go sit down somewhere and mind your business or deal with the issues in Hollywood rather than criticizing the NFL.
Agree, so I'm not gonna echo. let me say this. I don't like how she started this off. Why aren't more white players kneeling? Because I know what the flip of that is. Why aren't more black players kneeling? And hold on, if I was on the team, I wouldn't have kneeled. I wouldn't have protested in this way. Am I for the cause? Yeah, absolutely. Would I have done it a different way? Absolutely. How dare you criticize me for the way I want to do it? So that's what's bad about this. We create so much resentment by your own form of action. Let me just get to where I'm helping others and stop trying to criticize all my mannerisms in the process. Disturbing. No, Amy.
Next! Switching over to baseball, where Yasiel Puig's three-run homer on Saturday night helped send the Dodgers back to the World Series for the second straight year. Puig has been criticized throughout his up-and-down career, most notably by Bill Plaschke of the L.A. Times, but he remains a fan favorite in L.A. and online. So it's no surprise this clip of Puig celebrating in the locker room repaying the favor to Pulaski has gone viral. Take a look.
You're too dry. Ah! Too dry, and
yeah,
there you go.
Weak! Yeah! Now you can write whatever you want.
Hey, whatever you
want. LA Time, you write whatever you want now.
Whitlock, you're a hard-hitting journalist. Has that ever happened to you?
No one's thrown champagne on me because the Chiefs and the Royals never won championships when I was there.
Dang.
But was I attacked or threatened to be attacked multiple times in locker rooms over my career?
Face to face?
Oh, my God. Oh, yeah.
You got some names
Marcus,
and numbers?
Oh, Marcus Allen, Andre Rison. But the closest, I had a near-death experience. Hmm. You remember Wayne Simmons?
Oh, yeah, he was, woo! With Wayne.
Oh,
yeah, he was
completely about that life.
Yeah, all in.
Couldn't stand me. I'm sitting at my favorite adult gentleman's club
as
in Kansas City.
As you should.
Joe
be.
Magnusini, Diamond Joe's, love you.
All right.
I'm sitting in Diamond Joe's late on a Saturday or a Sunday night, and Wayne Simmons came in. Saw me sitting there having a beverage, talking to a young lady, and came running to dive into my chest, and did. Dove into my chest. And luckily, these two bouncers, because again, the owner loves me to death. He's like a
spent a lot of money there.
me to death. Yeah.
Keeping the business.
His
up.
Two bouncers came in and pulled Wayne Simmons off of me, touched him up a few times, and ran him out of the building, and I survived that. But that's the closest I've had to death, because Wayne Simmons would have mopped the floor with me. I'm not going to lie.
Dog, I played with Wayne, I think, 1 year in Buffalo. As a grown man, you shouldn't walk around getting punked, but he going to go somewhere that I'm not going. So
you got to pick it back.
Oh, in practice, man, I'm glad I had on equipment. This dude was crazy, man.
Yeah, he was about that life.
Yeah, all right.
All right, next, Darnell.
Yeah, moving over to Eric Reed, who got to a pregame scuffle with Malcolm Jenkins, but also made some plays on the field. In the fourth quarter, when he snagged a pick off Carson Wentz, Pro Football Talk's Michael David Smith tweeted, "Eric Reed just made a game-clinching interception. There are 31 other teams he could be making plays like that for, but they chose not to sign him." Now, the pick ended up being overturned by replay, but still, does Smith have a point?
No, this is premature SJWing. And I like Michael David Smith.
Premature.
But he works for Pro Football Woke, and so occasionally he has to throw this out there. And look, I don't even understand how he made the mistake, because within 30 seconds, they knew it was overturned.
Oh, you know, he was ready on that trigger. Like, I got what he won. First pick of his no-pick season. Oh, it's not a pick. Dang it, already hit send. All right, whatever. Yeah. Let it go.
All right, Darnell, what's next?
Yeah, last but not least, watching First Things First this morning, and our own Nick Wright had an interesting take about the Chiefs. Take a listen.
And while I understand the Rams are definitely the more balanced team, there's no question about it, the Chiefs, I feel, have a better offense. They have a better quarterback. They have better wide receivers. They have far and away the best special teams in football. Is that enough to overcome the fact that the Rams have a better defense? I think it is.
You guys agree the Chiefs are better than the Rams?
Wow, I went into this clip thinking there was no shot. I was going to say, I think the Chiefs can beat the Rams, but I'm not ready to say one team is better than the other. But I got to admit, I think Nick Wright kind of won me over. We're both Kansas City homers. Nick was born there. I obviously worked there for 16 years. But he kind of won me over with the special teams argument. And you know, when I really think about it, Tyreek Hill, Sammy Watkins, Travis Kelce, that is a better receiving core than the Rams. So I'm right. Where's my Pat Mahomes wig? I'm ready to throw it on. Yes.
Not
I
with
agree.
That suit. Don't throw that on right there.
Right, that's the whole fit up.
You're too clean right now. You're too clean, bro. He's talking to hidden yardage, special teams, hidden yardage, change of possession, change of field. I can respect that. But it's a talent argument he gave us, which is the potential of a team. But in reality, the execution argument is usually how you win a championship. We're going to find out in a couple weeks in Mexico, right down the street. We can go across that border and go find out, because they're playing each other.
Here's where I would say the difference is, if I were making the Rams argument. I just, two words, Aaron Donald.
Say it.
The Chiefs don't have anybody on their defense like Aaron Donald. Eric Berry's hurt at the safety position.
Houston.
Justin Houston's best days are a little bit behind. Lee Ford's actually the playmaker, and he's not Aaron Donald. All right, today we're talking about Rajon Rondo, who was at the center of this weekend's brawl between the Lakers and the Rockets. I think Rondo's actions are a big problem for LeBron James, and I've marked him down to a 62 total. My lowest score is along character lines. He spit on Chris Paul.
Spit.
That's a 10 in character. I got him a 17 in job performance, 14 at all time. Greatest look, he's won a championship for a while. He was a tremendous two-way player. Authenticity, I do think he is who we thought he was. He is who he is. So I got him at a 21 for a total of 62. He is a role player in my view.
Okay, I can't argue with the on-the-court assessments. Pretty much the same for me, 17 and 15 if you look at Rondo. Character dropped. I mean, he was at 25 for me. I'm a fan of Rondo, the person.
All the problems he's had with coaches.
Hey, some of that's on them. The dude's smart. He tells you what he thinks. He pulls no punches. And look, it's in a competitive environment, and a lot of coaches have gone to bat for the guy even after those situations.
Couldn't get along with Doc Rivers.
That's hard to do. That is hard to do. But you know what? At that time,
he spit on Chris Paul.
That's where he dropped to 17. He went from 25 to 17. You can't.
That's only 8 points.
Spat on the guy. Hey, look, he can have a defense. Reasonable doubt is a part of this conversation. That's why it's such a fire topic. I think he spit on him, but I'm not 100% sure. Reasonable doubt, I may be around that threshold. Like, he could give me an argument, my mouthpiece, and...
Okay, let me say this. Let me say this.
I'm listening.
Tony Baselli spits on you.
Oh,
where do you have his character at?
Zero. But I'm the one that got spat on. Like, it's different. I'm sitting here in this AC, got this suit on. You ain't spitting on me. But you spit on me on the court. No, that's the worst thing you can do to anybody is spit on.
Remorse. No apology. He hasn't apologized.
I ain't on his group text. He may be hitting LeBron right now, bro.
He did it in public. We need a public apology.
Now look at your ego all in this conversation. Nobody need to make Whitlock feel better. I'm the one got spit on. So, no. Authenticity, 24. He's thorough. Whatever Rondo's about, he lets you know that. So, got to respect a guy like that. So
Rajon Rondo is a 73?
All-star, yeah.
After spitting on somebody?
He was higher. He probably was a GOAT before that. I hate to
crack this joke, but we're going to do Ray Carew tomorrow. I want to see where you score him.
No, you score. Easy donuts. Easy donuts on the board. Easy donuts. Oh, boy, that was fast.